It's after 9 o'clock, so we will get this meeting called to order. Will you please take the roll?
Senator Aquino. Representative Davidsmeyer.
Here.
Senator DeWitt. Representative Harper. Representative Hernandez. Senator Lewis. Senator Taylor.
Here.
Representative Moeller. Senator Sims. Representative Sosnowski. Senator Severson. Representative Weaver. He was.
That's a big ass button. Anyway.
I have present.
All right, with that, we will start with opening comments from our executive director. Please add Senator Aquino to the roll. Yes, go ahead.
Good morning, co-chairs and commission members. For the audio record, my name is Clayton Klinke, and I am the executive director at the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability. I am joined at the table by Eric Noggle, who is our revenue manager at COGFA, and Ben Varner, who is the chief economist at COGFA. Our topic today is the discussion of our FY26 revenue estimate and our FY27 revenue estimate. Under our current statutory mandate in relation to our revenue estimates, we are required to release our revenue projections by the third Wednesday in March each year. Generally, we do this at the official COGFA Commission revenue meeting the first or second week of March. This year, we followed a slightly different process because today is actually the first day in March that both chambers are convening on the same day. Accordingly, our process this year was to prepare a memo with our official updated FY26 and 27 estimates. This memo was provided to Commission members the first week of March and was posted to our website on March 6. The posting of this memo fulfilled the statutory requirement for the estimates to be released by the third Wednesday in March. For today's meeting, we have prepared our full PowerPoint presentation, which includes a section showing the current national and Illinois-specific economic trends, consensus economic forecasts for the coming year, a review of revenue receipts received thus far in FY26, our projections for final FY26 receipts and the FY27 receipts, and we also include a comparison of how those estimates compare to the FY26 and 27 estimates contained in the governor's introduced budget. As you will see in these estimates, we have some good news about where we stand in relation to revenue assumptions contained in the FY26 budget. At the same time, it is important to remember that since the budget relies more and more on personal and corporate income taxes, although these current trends may be encouraging for FY26, there is an increasing importance on seeing the actual receipts collected during the revenue-heavy month of April to provide additional context and confidence in year-to-date trends. This optimism for 26 is tempered by a variety of factors as we look ahead to FY27. Additionally, as Ben Varner will highlight, since our process has been a little different this year, the economic data and revenue projections contained in our PowerPoint show data from before the recent events in the Middle East. As such, we will continue to track geopolitical events and updated economic data coupled with the April receipts to see if any revisions to our forecasts are necessary prior to the end of the spring session. So at this time, I will turn it over to Ben Varner, and he will take us through the first part of our presentation.
I am the chief economist at the commission.
Can I take you through what we've seen? I'm going to have you hold just 1 second. Please have Senator Sims and Representative Travis Weaver placed in the role. I'm sorry, go ahead.
We're going to take you over what we saw in 2025, what we're currently seeing at the beginning of 2026, and then look forward to the revenue or the economic forecast that led to our revenue estimates. The first slide shows the U.S. Economic Policy Uncertainty Index. This is an index based on media reporting using phrases related to economic and policy uncertainty, the number of federal tax code provisions that are scheduled to change, and the dispersion of economic forecasts from economists. At the beginning of February 2025, President Trump announced tariffs on many of our main trade partners, led to a high level of uncertainty. This is one of the broad themes of 2025, just with the numerous policy changes at the federal level, and especially tariffs and trade policy. Businesses have been somewhat unsettled. As you can see here, the index went to an all-time high in April of 2025, but then settled down throughout the rest of the year. As you can see here, just the latest index actually shot back up a little. That was actually February, so we haven't really seen the March data. But looking at the individual daily readings for this index, the expectation is to keep going up. So we're still at a very high level of policy uncertainty. Now, this has affected business practices throughout the year, and especially when we get to the next slide, you'll see changes in exports and imports that affected GDP readings for the year. So the next slide is real gross domestic product. This is the inflation-adjusted value of goods and services produced in the U.S. and is a primary indicator of economic health. So if you look at Q1 2025, you'll see negative growth in both the U.S. and Illinois. The U.S. was down negative 0.6%. Now, this was due to front-running of tariffs. Basically, businesses were bringing in a bunch of imports at this time, trying to get ahead of the tariffs, as imports are actually a deduction from GDP. This led to a downgrade in the level of growth. However, if you look at Q2, we actually grew 3.8%. This was the opposite effect. Instead of importing a ton of stuff now, we were taking stuff out of inventory, and this was sort of a backwind to us and a little headwind, or excuse me, not a headwind, but a wind in our sails. So this boosted the economy. In the third quarter, we rose to 4.4%. This was due to strong consumer spending along with continued strength in trade. However, the fourth quarter, once again, we saw that last little blip in blue there is a slowdown that was 0.7%. Now, this slowdown was mostly related to the federal government shutdown, which sank a full percentage point of growth. Likely, we'll see sort of more of a bounce back in Q1 2026 and Q2 due to federal spending. Usually, it's more of a change in timing versus not getting spent at all. We'll see. Overall, real GDP growth was 2.1% in 2025 for the U.S. This was down from 2.9% in 2023 and 2.8% in 2024. Right now, as of February, expectations, a composite of economic forecast called the consensus forecast projects real GDP growth of 2.6 in 2026 and 2.1 in 2027. So a pretty solid year, 26, but then a little slowdown, a little below long-term trends. One thing you'll notice here, most of the time Illinois has lagged the U.S. as a whole. You can see in the quarterly numbers here, and since 1998, real GDP growth has averaged 2.4% annually in the U.S. compared with 1.4% in Illinois. Now, in the next slide, we look at the Consumer Price Index. This is an inflation measure. It measures the average change of over time in the prices paid by urban consumers for a market basket of goods and services. As you all know, inflation has been a big deal the last few years. Basically, coming out of the pandemic with the shocks of to supply related to the COVID and increased demand coming out of COVID, we saw big increases in inflation. We peaked in about the summer of 2022, and then since then we've had about 2 years of declining inflation. However, in 2025, we sort of stalled out a little. As recently as September, we were at 3.0%, but since then we've slowed down to 2.4% for the headline CPI, and core CPI, which excludes the volatile components of food and energy, was at 2.5%. However, economic forecasters expect inflation to remain near 3% in the near term, next couple months, and then they were expecting a gradual decline throughout the 2026. However, as we mentioned previously, these estimates were before the issues arose in the Middle East. This is definitely going to cause the military operation in Iran. Tensions surrounding the Strait of Hormuz have placed upward pressure on oil prices, which could have significant effects on the broader economy. If you looked at the second table, this is the Chicago area inflation measures. Basically, you see a very similar pattern compared to the U.S. We actually, the Chicago area had been a little bit above the U.S., closer to almost 4%, but in the last couple months has cooled down due to the fall in auto prices locally and gas prices and a little slowdown in grocery prices. The Chicago CPI most recently was at 2.0%, while core was at 1.8%. So Chicago area is seeing a little slowdown in inflation compared to the U.S. The next slide shows the Manufacturing Purchasers Managers Index. This index measures the health of the manufacturing sector. Above 50 indicates expansion, below equals contraction. And as you see here, as we came out of the pandemic, we saw some all-time highs, but then slowly declined. We fell below 50 in November of 2022, and we've basically been in that area since then, almost 2 years of contraction with 1 or 2 months of expansion. However, the first 2 months of 2026 saw the PMI return to expansionary territory above 50%, signaling a modest improvement in manufacturing activity. Overall, the U.S. manufacturing sector has returned to modest growth, supported by rising orders and productions currently, though hiring remains pretty stagnant and costs are increasing. The next slide shows the same type of index for the service sector, which is much larger. You see a very similar pattern. Coming out of the pandemic, we saw all-time highs, but then a slowdown. Basically, since 2022 and early 2023, the index has signaled slow but steady growth. Most recently, we've actually seen a little pop in the last 5 months or so, and in February, the services PMI rose to 56.1, which is more in line with what we were seeing prior to the pandemic. So that's good. Hopefully we can continue that upward. We're currently expanding at a solid pace, reflecting increased economic activity, which once again, cost pressures remain elevated. The next slide shows employment data. This is the monthly change in total U.S. non-farm payrolls, both for the U.S. and Illinois. The top chart shows the U.S. As you can see, we had higher levels of growth in 22 and 23, but then we've slowed down the last 2 years. In 2024, the U.S. non-farm payrolls increased by an average of about 122,000 jobs per month, while 2025 job growth slowed to roughly 10,000, so much slower. Unfortunately, Illinois, once again, has sort of lagged the U.S. We've actually seen, we saw 7 of 8 months preceding December of actual declines. Before December, we gained about 12,000 jobs. Despite this pattern, Illinois employment was essentially flat in 2025, declining by about 1,700 jobs after gains of more than 40,000 in the previous 2 years. Slower job growth in 2025 likely reflected structural labor market constraints, including an aging workforce and reduced immigration, as well as uncertainty related to policy changes at the federal level. Looking at Illinois individually, in 2025, we saw some big drops off in trade, transportation, and utilities, down about 17,000, which was counterbalanced by about a growth of 18,000 in education and health services. The next slide shows the unemployment rates for both the U.S. and Illinois. As you can see, leading into the pandemic and then even after coming back out, Illinois has had a gap. Usually we're about a half point to a full point higher in our unemployment rate. Fortunately, this gap actually closed in the fall of 2025. But recently, it's opened up just a little. The latest data had Illinois unemployment rate at 4.6% in December, whereas nationally it's 4.4% currently. Now, While it's good to have a lower unemployment rate, it's not all good news. Although the unemployment rate for Illinois has declined, this reflects reductions in both employment and the labor force. In 2025, the number of employed Illinois residents fell, while the labor force has contracted by an even larger amount, lowering the unemployment rate despite underlying labor market conditions. So basically, we've seen a bigger decline in the labor force. So that's what's leading to the lower unemployment rate. Overall, we've seen softening in the employment market, with younger workers and African American workers having faced more difficulty finding jobs as hiring demand has slowed. The next slide shows interest rates as part of the Fed's policy to fight inflation. You saw short-term interest rates raised in the spring of 2022, reaching 40-year highs since the early 2000s in 2023. And basically, we saw a slowdown in inflation over the next couple years. However, in late 2025, the Federal Reserve cut the federal funds rate 3 times, quarter point each time, lowering the target rate to 3.5% to 3.75%. This was done due to the belief that we are getting inflation somewhat under control, and it was trending toward the 2% target rate. But we've seen softening in the our employment picture. Currently, the 10-year Treasury yield is around 4.2%, and the 30-year mortgage was near 6.1%. At least it was last week. Sorry, I didn't check that up yesterday. However, at the Fed meetings that concluded last week, the Fed decided to keep the short-term interest rates where they were. However, the Fed Reserve is somewhat in a bind currently. Job growth has faltered while inflation has remained above their target level and has shown indications of moving up. The growing conflict in the Middle East has increased the price of a barrel of oil by around 40% last week and likely will remain elevated in the near term. Gas was up around 22% since the beginning of the month last week. This will put pressure on prices but may destroy demand as well. The Fed will have some difficult decisions to make in the coming meetings. At the meeting last week, the Fed's updated their summary of economic projections. At this point, the median prediction has one rate cut penciled in for the year, whereas some economic forecasters see more like two. So we'll see what they end up doing. So one of the big issues we saw with this uncertainty was concerns related to trade. Overall, it didn't seem to have that huge of effect on in Illinois, but there's definitely some effects on individual industries. As you can see here, Illinois goods trade imports jumped coming out of the pandemic, but have been falling for the last 3 years, and they were down 3.2% in 2025. Exports saw a similar jump, but was relatively flat in recent years, and were down 2.3% in 2025. So despite all the concern about tariffs, in the end, it wasn't that big of a deal for Illinois in some. However, if you look at the next page, you can see that some individual industries really had some big changes. Illinois goods were declined by approximately $1.9 billion to $80 billion in 2025. The largest declines were in agricultural products and transportation equipment, while primary metal manufacturers and computer and electronic trends showed growth. Now, looking at the ag sector, that was basically oilseed and grains. They were down almost 36%, whereas the transportation equipment, that was mostly motor vehicles and vehicle parts, they were down 17%. So you can see, while overall net trade was about the same, a little down, the individual industries were affected considerably. Now we'll move on to look at some of the economic forecasts that were available to us in February when we were putting our revenue estimates together. The first forecast we'll look at is called the consensus forecast. This is a conglomeration of 25 monthly forecasts from banks, econometric firms, professional business association, academic institution, and individual businesses. The first one we see, as previously stated, real GDP is expected growth about 2.6% this year and 2.1% next year, which will be a little below long-term trend. Excuse me, these are U.S. economic forecasts. Looking at disposable personal income, we're expecting a little bounce back in 2026 to 2.1%, and then even a little more growth in 2027. whereas personal consumption is expected to bounce back this year to 2.3%, but then fall in the next year to 2.0%. Looking at consumer prices, they expect overall average growth to be 2.6% this year, which is a little bit higher than we are currently, but then fall to about 2.4% next year. The unemployment rate they have for the U.S. at 4.5%, which is just a tad above where we are currently, but then lowering to 4.3% next year. The next slide shows a service we get from S&P Global. They provide us a U.S. forecast and then also an Illinois forecast, and they are one of the econometric firms that's included in the previous consensus forecast. They have fourth quarter over fourth quarter annual growth of 2.3% in 2026, which is going to be in line basically with long-term trends, but then a fall to 1.7% in 2027. They have personal consumption growing at 2.6% this year, but then falling to 1.8% next year, so definitely a slowdown. Durable goods, they have good growth for both years, whereas non-durable goods and services are expected to slow. Overall, their unemployment rate at the end of this year, they expect to be at 4.6% and 4.5% next year, which is a little higher than the consensus. Now, if we move on to the Illinois forecast, you're going to see, once again, we lag the U.S. as a whole, and that's indicated in this forecast also. They have real gross state product coming in at 1.6% this year and only 1.1% next year. Total employment, they have growing just a hair in 2026, but then falling back in 2027. Personal income, we actually expect decent growth there, both 26 and 27, and we've been seeing that in our receipts, but in some of the data we see on weekly wages also, and monthly data. And they have the unemployment rate actually growing to 5.2% in 2026 and then falling back to 5.1%, which is almost a half point higher than we are currently. So that's definitely a concern. We start seeing the unemployment rate going up, though. Maybe we'll start seeing some of the labor force come back. We don't know, but that's what their expectation is. Now, Eric will take over and talk to you about the general fund's revenue estimates for this year and the next.
Good morning. Again, my name is Eric Noggle. I'm the revenue manager for COGFA, and we'll start here on page 19, showing just a brief look at where the revenues that were assumed for fiscal year 26. The amount was $55.297 billion. This was the estimated amount of revenues that was needed to help with this year's budget. That would be a $1.3 billion increase compared to where fiscal year 25 actuals finished. So we need growth of 2.4% throughout this fiscal year to reach the budget numbers. Turn to page 20, you can see how we're doing so far this fiscal year. So through February, through the first 8 months of the fiscal year, we're doing quite well. Growth of $1.337 billion. That's a growth of 4.1% as compared to where we were through February of last year. Now, we've seen the growth in several different areas. One being the personal income tax. We've had net growth of 4.2%. Sales tax revenues, it shows net growth of 1.2%, but on a gross level, we've actually gained 4.3% this fiscal year. The reason for that difference between the net and the gross is we have more money being transferred or allocated towards a road fund and the transportation funds more than we did last year at this time.
Please add Representative Hernandez to the roll.
In terms of all other state sources, you can see we've had strong growth here as well in fiscal year 26, growth of $308 million. Most of that is because of a strong growth in the estate tax. We were up 53% in estate tax revenues so far in fiscal year 26. We also have seen a good rise in insurance tax revenues because of higher premiums, growth of 34% through February. Interest income, the growth is not as high, but is above expectations because the interest rates have stayed a little higher than what was initially thought at this point when this was estimated a year ago. Transfers in, this is where you're seeing the big pop in fiscal year 26. The income tax refund transfer, and as a reminder, what that transfer is any money remaining in the income tax refund fund at the end of the fiscal year, the balance is then transferred to the general revenue fund the following fiscal year. In fiscal year 25, that amount was $253 million. In fiscal year 26, that has grown to $700 million, so significantly higher than last year and higher than what was anticipated when the budget was put together. So that's one of the main reasons you're seeing transfers in up 40.8% through February. And then federal sources, we are down 6% currently, but it's a very volatile source. That could pick up by the last 3 months, 4 months of the fiscal year. So again, the bottom line is it's been a very good year so far for February, up $1.3 billion or 4.1% so far. Now, as Clayton said earlier, that we still have the very important personal income tax and corporate income tax final tax period coming up. So we will continue to watch that and see if there are some changes that we need to be made to our estimate. But you can see at this point, this is what our estimate is down below on page 21. Bottom line is we have revised our estimate up as compared to the enacted budget to $55.983 billion. This is growth of $686 million. Again, this increase is reflecting that year-to-date activity that we've seen so far in fiscal year 26. A lot of the gains we've seen is because of the personal income tax, up $661 million in our increase and for that revenue line. All other state sources are increasing at $557 million, transfers in up $409 million. But you see a significant reduction in our estimate for corporate income tax. A lot of that has to do with how there were some federal tax changes that took place after the budget was enacted. And so Illinois conforms to many of those changes, and that has caused a reduction in the corporate income tax revenues, especially as compared to what we thought it was going to be. That is why you're seeing us reduce that revenue estimate for the corporate income tax line by $837 million. But again, the bottom line is still in good shape for fiscal year 26, growth of $686 million as compared to the enacted budget. So if we turn to page 22, you can see more details to that forecast, again, giving to that 1.2% increase compared to the revenue, the assumed revenues for 26. Down below and on page 23, you can see how our revised estimate compares to that of the GOMB. They come out with their estimate in mid-February with a number of $55.228 billion. Our estimate of $55.983 is $755 million above them, so 1.4% higher. You see that we're a little higher in items like the personal income tax and all other state sources. As a reminder, we have the advantage of having our estimate come out in March, so we were able to reflect actuals of January and February into our estimate where they would not have had that luxury. So we do have a little bit of help in our estimate by having those extra actuals, and I think that's probably one of the main reasons for this difference between the two estimates. As we look forward to seeing what we think 27 is going to look like, there's different factors that we continue to look at every year. The main sources of revenue for the state of Illinois continues to be from what we call the big three, the sales tax, personal income tax, and corporate income tax. Those three revenue sources bring in around 80% of total general funds for the state of Illinois. The income taxes alone bring in around 60%. So we watch those items very closely to see how they're performing, and which helps us to create an estimate for fiscal year 27. As you can see on the chart on page 24, where this is a look at a four-month moving average of year-over-year growth in sales tax revenues. You can see coming out of the pandemic, things slowed a little bit from where they were a year ago for much of 2024. And then 2025, it picked up a little bit. And so we've had actually pretty decent growth in sales tax revenues, which is why we've increased our revenue estimate for sales tax in fiscal year 26. You can see it's starting to slow a little bit, but we're still hovering between 2 and 4% in growth. If this gets weaker, this is where we're a little concerned, because a weaker sales tax performance could lead to reduced corporate profits and job cuts, thereby negatively affecting tax receipts from the state's largest revenue sources, the sales tax, personal income tax, and the corporate income tax. As we look down to page 25, you can see there's two variables that are very important to the individual income tax. That's employment growth as well as wage growth. We're going to first look at employment growth. Coming out of the pandemic, we had pretty strong growth on a monthly year-over-year basis. In 2023, things were doing okay, but then it's really slowed for much of 2024 and 2025, where we've had very stagnant activity for much of that time. The last 2 months of data that we have available actually shows a little decline as compared to a year ago. We should have another 3 months of data coming next month. It's been a little bit of a slowdown in the data release because of the government shutdown on the federal level, but we should have a better picture of how employment is looking at the end of next month. But as you see, this is not necessarily good news for individual income tax revenues on its own because employment levels have been very stagnant. What has helped individual income tax revenues has been wages, and you can see that on the next page. Wage growth was pretty stagnant throughout much of 2023 and 2024, but has really increased quite a bit in 2025, and that has allowed us to have the good year for fiscal year 26 because wages have helped that offset that stagnant activity from employment levels. So if this continues to grow, as economists think that it will, this should be allow us to have a pretty good, decent growth for going into fiscal year 27. One thing that's going to hurt us on an individual income tax basis going into fiscal year 27, however, is shown on page 27, and that's the impact of true-up adjustments. As a reminder, each year the Department of Revenue reviews prior year business-related income tax collections and adjusts upcoming fiscal year revenues to ensure compliance with statutory allocations. The result of these allocations or these true-up adjustments are shown in the table below. As you can see in the middle there, during fiscal year 26, the personal income tax is receiving a positive adjustment of $806 million throughout this fiscal year. Some new numbers just got released by the Department of Revenue at the beginning of March. It shows that instead of having $806 million in this adjustment, we're actually going to have a small decline of $135 million. So the net difference between the two fiscal years is almost $1 billion, a $941 million difference. That's a significant, and it's going to have a significant impact on revenues in 27 for the personal income tax line. And that is one of the primary factors why COGFA is forecasting revenues to be slightly lower in fiscal year 27 than in fiscal year 26. You can see that on page 28, what our official forecast is. COGFA is estimating that fiscal year 27 general funds revenues will total $55.525 billion. This represents a decline of $458 million, or 0.8%, from the Commission's revised fiscal year 26 estimate of $55.983 billion. I do want to point out that, again, that is compared to our revised estimate. The fiscal year 26 enacted budget was $55.3 billion, so our estimate of $55.5 is just slightly ahead of where the budget was for fiscal year 26. Now, this relatively stagnant revenue picture is largely attributable to several key factors. One is the personal income tax. As you can see in the table below, we are lowering our estimate by $122 million, due to the combination of the true-up adjustments that I just mentioned on the previous slide, the absence of tax amnesty in fiscal year 27. We received about $100 million in tax amnesty dollars in 26. That won't be there in fiscal year 27, so that's one of the reasons. And then we expect lower receipts, slightly lower receipts due to some growth in some tax credits and an increase in the standard exemption amount. As we look at sales tax, the net change is we're expecting only a 1.4% growth in net revenues for sales tax. We actually are expecting 2.9% growth in gross receipts, but we have more money from motor fuel-related revenues being diverted to transportation funds in fiscal year 27, and that is why the net number is less than the gross value. In terms of all other state sources, we're expecting a decline of $274 million due to the anticipated slowing in interest income, softer estate tax receipts. We don't want to count on that large amount of estate tax receipts that we saw in 26. We're not confident that that's going to return in 27. And then we have several revenue sources that are declining revenue sources, such as the cigarette and public utility taxes. We're expecting continued declines in those areas. So in total, for all other state sources, we're expecting $274 million, a lower number than our revised 26 value. And then finally, for TransRezin, the revenues are expected to be around $293 million lower, as the transfer from the Income Tax Refund Fund is anticipated to fall well below its fiscal year 26 level of $700 million. On page 29, in the middle there, you can see some more details between our transfer in number. We are expecting slight increases in the lottery transfer, gaming, sports wagering, but those just revenues are being offset by this assumed reduction in the income tax refund fund transfer. So again, bottom line, we're expecting a $458 million decline as compared to our 26 revision. On the next page, on page 30, you can see how our estimate compares to that of the governor's office, which released their estimate in the budget book in mid-February. Over there in the far right of the table, you can see their value of $56.055 billion. That estimate is $530 million above COGFA, so we are $530 million below them. However, their estimate includes $728 million in net revenue adjustments that would require statutory changes. Our estimate is based on current law and does not include those $728 million. So in the middle area of this table, we subtract out that $728 million from the governor's office's number. So that would reduce their estimate to $55.327 billion. Our estimate is actually $198 million higher than their estimate when you base it on current law comparisons. So essentially the same number when you're talking about a $55 billion number, a difference of only 0.4%. Further details of that comparison can be seen here on page 31. And then we have more information in the following pages. What makes up that $728 million from the governor's proposals is shown there on 32. And then just a historical data available for your viewing for on page 33 and 34. With that, we would be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
I have one. If you go back to page 28, you talked about public utility taxes being down. What does that encompass?
That's mainly just because of the change the way people are now using cell phones rather than land-based phones. And so as land-based phones drop, then we're seeing a decline in public utility revenues from that specific component.
Questions? Senator Stevenson?
On the personal income tax numbers, you mentioned the tax amnesty. How much is tax amnesty does that bring in?
For the personal income tax line, it brought in about $100 million in fiscal year 26. I think in total for the general funds, it was a little over $200 million that I brought in for the state of Illinois. There was other revenues that were not general funds, but from a general fund standpoint, I think it was around $200 million. I can double check that for you. But.
Okay. So when we look at the overall personal income tax revenue or growth, the amnesty is really a little misleading because that's not really... personal income growth, that's just...
It's fast-forwarding revenues that you probably would have got eventually, maybe not all of it, but yes, it's going to reduce what you are going to get from audits in the future. It's fast-forwarding it into fiscal year 26. That's correct.
Okay. And then on the interest income, can you just help me understand? Now that comes from... does that come from investments or cash reserves, or and is that what kind of investments are? Is that in treasuries, or is that?
It's mostly treasuries. There are some. The treasurer is limited to what he can invest in. It's pretty secure stuff. Mostly, it's treasuries. There is some corporate bonds, but everything's basically a year or two in length. And they have to work with the comptroller to see what their needs are. But they're mostly extremely safe.
So cash instruments, not any kind of other investment?
Not that I'm aware of. It's all like treasuries, some corporate bonds, notes, but no equity or anything like that.
Okay. All right. I think that's all I had. Thank you very much.
Other questions? Representative Mueller?
Thank you. You answered my question regarding the interest, the reduction in interest in investments. Can you explain a little bit more about the estimate on the estate tax, the big drop there?
So we've seen a huge jump in estate tax in the last couple of years. It's definitely up, and it would not surprise me if it was up again. However, with estate tax, there's a lot of volatility, just basically who died in a given year, and that can make a huge difference. If one billionaire dies, that can make a huge difference. We had, what was it, $128 million?
So we received in February $100 million more than we did compared to the previous or not in February, in November. In November, we received $100 million more than we did the previous November. So it just appeared that somebody very wealthy passed away. And so estate tax revenues are up generally because of the market conditions and how they've improved over the last couple of years. But just the huge pop that we saw in November makes us not sure that we can count that into our base as we go into 27.
And I believe that 685 is still the second highest we would ever had. So
that's
it's
correct.
Still very elevated, but based on past performance, it can have some volatility from year to year based on both who died and market conditions and asset price levels.
Okay. So this one could change over time. This isn't. In terms of the sales tax on motor fuel, we're seeing some high prices now, and we're not sure how long that's going to last. Is there anticipated growth in that area? I know we're moving some of it towards...
Yeah, so that's going to mass transit funding now. It was going to the road fund, but legislation changed that in November so that the full amount's going there. Yeah, so you're going to have two different things happening. You're going to have increase in gas prices, which you've already seen. I believe it was like 22% growth through the month. And expectation is for oil prices to stay high, depending on what happens in the Middle East and the Strait of Hormuz. It could definitely have that. However, while it definitely in the short term give us a pop, eventually prices get too high for too long and demand will start falling. So I do think in the short term we will see some increase there, but if it lasts too long, too high, you will see people finding alternative or just not going on, you know, as many trips vacation-wise or finding different ways to commute to work, stuff like that.
Gotcha. And then last question. Last year we saw a big drop in corporate income tax revenues. This year you're projecting a $39 million increase or 0.7% increase.
Yeah, we're expecting fiscal year 27 to be relatively stagnant. We're not sure what's going to happen as we get to the final tax payment periods coming in fiscal year 26. Well, I'll be really anxious to see where that actually comes in because so much of that is related to the federal tax changes and how that's going to react. So our fiscal year 27, we are expecting relatively stagnant revenues between 26 and 27. However, that true-up adjustment that's hurting the personal income tax line is actually benefiting the corporate income tax line. So we're going to receive from that adjustment around $385 million as a plus in that just that adjustment portion of the income or that portion of that estimate. So that's going to help corporate income tax revenues a little bit in fiscal year 27.
Okay. And then I guess final question. I know last year we decoupled from some of the federal tax changes that happened last year. What remains in our revenue estimates that are still coupled with federal?
I probably need to go back and look at that exactly. I know we've only done a portion of the stuff that we would have to decouple from if you wanted to decouple from everything.
Mm-hmm.
I think the governor's office may have came out with a number around, and I may be incorrect on this, so I think around $800 million. And I want to say that what we've decoupled from is just a couple hundred million of that portion, that would be a policy decision whether you decide that is worth decoupling from or not. So there are still segments of that still remaining that, again, that would be up to the lawmakers to decide whether that's worth it or not.
Sure. About $600 million worth of decoupling.
I'm thinking it's still a couple hundred million dollars worth of money that you could still obtain if you wanted to decouple, but I would have to look at that and get back to you.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions? Senator DeWitt?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, gentlemen, for your presentation. One of the items that I've been looking at that I don't see included in your presentation is population. And I'm looking at your February booklet that you passed. You guys are forecast, or the CAGFA is forecasting that Illinois' population will decline by approximately 600,000 individuals from 2025 through 2033. Is that correct?
That is actually Moody's. That's a report Moody's puts together for it. I believe you're looking at the economic forecast we put out like a month ago.
Yes. Yes.
So that is that's Moody's forecast they provide for us. Yes.
How do you find the reliability of their data?
We've had issues in the past. The economic census throughout, or excuse me, not economic census, the Census Bureau puts out new updated data for a July 1st estimate every year. Throughout the 2010s, there was a trend in their data that indicated we were losing a lot of people. When the actual census came out, it was hardly any loss at all. And then they did a follow-up survey, and they actually indicated we gained a couple. So there's definitely been some issues related to the reliability of those estimates. Now, our opinion is, basically, if you look at us compared to the rest of the country, if we're gaining a little or losing a little, we are one of the slowest, if not the slowest, growing or losing a little. So that's sort of where our opinion is. We've been basically stagnant for the last 15 years or so. We believe that there was a small increase in the last couple of years related to immigration, but now that obviously has probably gone away and probably is not going to come back anytime soon. So the expectation is probably we would see some losses again. So that's sort of where our feeling is related to populations over the last 5 years. So, Eric, is that?
I would agree with him. Yeah, sometimes we get stuck in trying to figure out, okay, did we lose population, did we not? I think the big picture is, as compared to other states, we're not performing near as well as other states in that metric.
Okay, and yes, I just want on the record that we are one of the slowest or least growing, losing, but the state of Illinois is not a shining star in population growth in the United States.
I think that is fair to say. I think Midwest in general is like that. Illinois is very similar to many Midwestern states in that that comparison. But that is correct. We would be in the bottom, probably half, if not one of the lowest of states in terms of population growth.
And when I looked at the Moody's report, it is showing, though, that the population of seniors is growing, that is the only bright spot.
And I think that would just be the nature of the baby boomers. That generation is just, that's a growing population. And that segment is concerned. And I think that would be something you would see nationwide as well.
And this is leading to a question of when 70% of our GRF income is based upon personal income tax and sales tax, but primarily personal income tax, do seniors pay state income tax on the retirement income?
They do not, not in Illinois.
So besides population loss or stagnation, coupled with an increase in the baby boomers are 65 and older, our pressure on personal income tax as a source of revenue for GRF should only get worse by these projections.
That component is not helping, I would say that.
What do you, I mean, any sidebar in, we've been using Illinois terms of stagnant, lagging. I don't hear growth. I don't hear prosperity. I know we've moved into, progressive socialism policies here in Illinois, and there's pressure to become more progressive, more socialistic. Do those economic theories help growth, or do you believe they cause stagnation?
I don't know if you want to answer.
I think you're getting a little political there for our days. They're definitely...
I can withdraw the question.
I'm not sure that that's a question that they're going to answer.
Yeah.
So,
I appreciate that. I'll withdraw the question. How does that sound?
That sounds good. Want to get Senator DeWitt in there. Are you done, Senator Lewis?
I am. Thank you.
Senator DeWitt.
Thank you. Just a quick comment and perhaps a suggestion. It seems like every year I've been at most of these revenue projection hearings, I've always asked, why aren't we breaking out motor fuel tax revenues? Motor fuel tax revenues.
So those are a non-general fund So we do have a breakout of that, motor fuel tax revenues, but it's not included here because this is our general funds estimate.
Okay.
So we do have that.
But I see cigarette tax. I see alcohol.
Yes.
Halogen tax.
Now, there are parts of the cigarette tax and alcohol that there are portions of that that go to non-general funds areas. So what you see here is just the portion that's just attributable to the general funds portions.
So specifically, where does the sales tax revenue generated from the sales tax of gasoline as well as motor fuel tax revenue, where does that show up in this report specifically? I have the 26.
So
page 22 is the 26 revenue estimates. There's no breakdown for motor fuel.
Page 22, you'll see this sales tax distributions and sales tax deposits into the road fund. That would be the motor fuel sales tax revenue component of that, sales tax revenue on motor fuel. So in this particular year, in fiscal year 26, approximately $695 million from sales tax revenues on motor fuel. That's was brought in. That's what's being diverted to the road fund. Now, there is a little bit higher portion of that. I believe that's not. That remains in the state's general funds, but this is the portion that we're estimating to be of the motor fuel tax-related sales taxes that are going into are going from the general funds to the road fund.
What page is that?
This would be on page 22 at the very bottom where we have non-general funds distributions.
Oh, here it is.
Sales tax distributions there at the very bottom. They're showing the sales tax deposits into the road fund.
What about motor fuel tax under the road fund? Is it included?
That would be not included in here because that's the non-general fund portion of this. So we don't show the motor fuel tax revenues in this report.
Okay.
Well, we can get that to you.
Yeah, just, and I pulled it on a couple of occasions. So I guess my only concern is this number is growing. I mean, Representative Moeller mentioned the price of gas these days. Of course, you know, we have nothing to do with that. That's tied to the world market pricing, not necessarily what's going on in the United States. But that number is becoming so big, and there's so much of that money being redistributed. If you don't know exactly what's coming in, it's hard to track. It's the proverbial shell game. If you don't know what's coming in, you have a hard way of – it's difficult to estimate where it's going once it comes in.
So, sure.
Again, I would make the request – suggestion, whatever you want to call it, a more significant breakdown of those revenues, sales tax revenues, motor fuel tax revenues, broken out as separate line items, just to keep them separate from, you know, all the rest of the general revenue sales tax dollars that are brought in.
I would support that as well. I think that's a good idea.
And we can get that for you.
I appreciate it.
Along that line, are you done, Senator?
Yes, thank you, Chairman.
Just a follow-up question on that. In terms of the gasoline sales tax, now we've diverted all of that into the transportation bill.
That's correct.
Okay. What this was showing in terms of the past was when we had the small portion that was still coming back into the general fund.
That's correct. And I think it would be helpful to look at in the back on page 33. So I know this is some small numbers here, but in the same manner that I just showed that previous table, there's a section there in non-general funds distribution. And there in the middle is the sales tax distributions and deposits into the road fund. You can see that deposit in fiscal year 22 of $132 million. It was zero in that line for four fiscal years as what we're showing here. In fiscal year 22, that was the first part of that phase-in. So $132 million in sales tax revenues from motor fuel was sent to the road fund. In fiscal year 23, that grew to $484 million. That then grew again in fiscal year 24 to $570 million. And then in 25 and 26, it's hovered around $698 and $647 million. In 27, it's zero because that money is now going to go to all of it. It's going to go to transportation instead of the road fund. So that's where you're seeing that component.
Which I think, just to reiterate what Senator DeWitt was asking for, I think it's important for us to understand just how big that fund is. Some of us in the downstate area are still kind of reeling from that vote.
Yeah. One question I have is about the estate tax. You know, some of us are interested in some modifications on that, some reforms, specifically with farm estate tax issues. Is there a way for you? I know the Attorney General's office handles a lot of that information. Is there a way for you to anticipate what changes might mean for our budget if we were to ask that?
What kind of changes are you? Well, just the, you know, the exclusion amount?
Yeah.
Yeah, we can do, we've done that in the past and okay. do that pretty readily, just the exclusion level. The question usually comes, though, is like farm assets and stuff.
Right.
And that's where we just don't really have much information. The only thing we have is basically at the federal level, which has a much higher exclusion level, we can see some portion of assets that are farm-related. And it's, if I remember, it's like 5 or 6%, so it's not that many. So, but at the Illinois level, we just don't have that much information that we personally can do anything with.
But hypothetically, if we were to ask, what if we were to match what the federal government does, you would have those numbers?
In
terms of their exclusions, they have a much higher cap on.
Yeah, so if you just went the exclusion level in general, yes, we can do that, which would be a significant cost to the state or decline in revenues. But if it's just like farm-specific or individual businesses, we don't have that much data related to that. If you were looking like, say, farm assets are not included in estate tax.
Gotcha.
But you could run a model based on the last few years, if we were under the federal limits versus the state limits, what that would
have. Yes, we do have data that shows, so our exclusion amount's $4 million. So we can run, if you want to raise it to $10 million, you want to raise it to $12 million, if you want to add spouses and portability and stuff like that, we can do those kind of numbers.
I think if you could run some of those models, would that make sense to have them run that?
Yeah, I think there needs to be, this probably gets into future legislation, but
right.
I think that knowing that you have that available, I think that some of us will be asking that.
Yeah. So is that a request that you, Mr. Chairman, you'd like to make?
Yeah, I'd like to make that request of what is it?
What would you like? Just like every million, or is there, we're at $4 million now.
Right.
The federal, I think, is, what, $15 million? I'm sorry, off the top of my head. Is it 16?
Yeah, if you would maybe just take that in increments.
Okay.
You know, maybe 4, 8, 12, 16. Mm-hmm. That would be interesting.
Thank you.
Is that Representative Harper to the roll? Any other questions on the budget? So, Representative, you're just in time for us to adjourn, it looks like. I think we've asked all your questions. no other questions? Clayton?
I just wanted to mention briefly under our new business, our next meeting will be on April 14th in this same room at 9 a.m., and that will be our annual group insurance meeting.
And we always look forward to that. With no other business, the committee stands adjourned.